All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch, and today I'm interviewing Leslie Wheeler. Leslie is a poet, quilter, and textile artist who merges tarot symbolism with textiles in striking ways. In this first half of our Needle Exchange, we dive into her introduction to tarot as both a meditative tool and a visual storytelling form, her PhD in poetry, and how quilting became a freer creative outlet during the COVID lockdown. We also explore her process of translating historical tarot decks into fabric, her ideas of liminality, and the importance of making art accessible. If you like artists whose work explores dreamlike spaces, then Needle Exchanges 33 and 34 with Orly Kogan will be right up your street. And if you've enjoyed this Needle Exchange, a review on your favourite podcasting platform would be gratefully received. Thank you very much. I'll be back next week with the second half of my conversation with Leslie. But until then, enjoy the show.
I'm not, like, tarot unfamiliar, right? Full disclosure, right? I'm technically a Reiki master, although I haven't really done any Reiki for a long time. I sometimes think I'm a bit like a hippie that doesn't really like hippies, in as much as if you want a smell of patchouli, that's you do you, but I'm not that kind of guy. Yet fundamentally, I believe that we're all part of a singular energy field, having a multiplicity of experience so that we can understand the magnificence of ourselves, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm tarot-ish familiar, but imagine I wasn't. I'd like you to tell me all about tarot.
Okay. Tarot can kind of be anything you want, but how I think of it is like a tool for understanding. So it's also, it's art, which is something that's important to me. So it's art, it's tangible, and it's something that the cards themselves don't change, but you change around them. So every time you use them, something different will come up, but it'll be familiar images. And it's also... within it is a narrative. I'm a writer too, so I like that part about it, that it's like storytelling and characters. And so I just think of it as a tool for understanding. I don't think of it as in like you read your cards and it's going to tell you exactly what's going to happen or what lottery numbers to play, but it's something just to like a meditation tool kind of.
Do you do, other than creating them excellently in textiles, do you proactively use them in any other areas?
Just as like a check-in for myself, like whenever I hit something in my life that's frustrating or confusing, or I find myself thinking about a lot, I'll bust them out and think about them. I also like to use them with friends, like on the full moon and, you know, stuff like that too, but nothing too prescriptive or like scheduled or anything like that.
Yeah, it feels like it is, if you're looking at it on the right standpoint, isn't it, is that the cards are there and the cards are just the language that's being used to get the message across at that point in time.
Sure. Yeah. Just like a little extra information to go off of.
Do you have a favorite tarot card? Are you allowed to have favorites?
Yeah, you're allowed to have favorites. I like the Hermit.
Because?
It's so insular and something, I'm introverted and I like quiet and being alone. And I forget which book it was described it this way, but thought about the Hermit as a movable chapel, like a chapel unto itself. I really like that. Yeah.
I was thinking, cause I saw on one of your Instagram posts, just trying to think which one you're making. Maybe you're making like the star or something. And you were like, if anybody wants card making, let me know, you know, let me know what your favorites are. And I thought of one, but then I thought I'll try and be clever. I was like, I'm a Capricorn. Let's Google what I'm supposed to like or something like that, you know, because I can't think for myself anymore. We live in an age of ChatGPT. No one can think for themselves. apparently Capricorns, the card that is most closely aligned to them in major arcana is the Devil, because it's all about sort of leadership. Let me read what it says. It says the Devil represents ambition, material achievement, and the struggles with limitation or temptation, mirroring Capricorn's disciplined yet success-driven personality. I was like,
Yeah.
I don't feel like I want to be that guy. No, but then I was thinking about the one that sprung to mind. I quite like the Tower. Because it's all like life-changing events, isn't it? It's all of that.
Yeah. Starting over. No choice in the matter. Yeah.
I've had a few of those times. I rebooted my life. When did I reboot my life? Turn of the century, which is a bit depressing to say out loud, but I quit working in London and I moved back into my mum with my mum in Milton Keynes and kind of quit working in the centre of town, got a job working stacking cheese in a local supermarket and kind of rebooted my life completely. So I feel like I did my Tower thing then a little bit.
It's good to do that every so often.
Yeah. And then I'm interested as well, and we will start talking about textiles at some point within the next hour.
Yeah, sure.
Sooner or later. But I'm interested then that you have those as a mode of communication, but then I also observed from your Instagram that you're a poet at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you have these two disciplines. And I always like it when people have a couple of disciplines. I want to know how well do they fit together? Do they run alongside each other? Are they very separate streams of creativity? How does it work?
I think they draw from the same well, to use an old metaphor. But they are separate mostly. But it's like the kind of thing where I did writing, creative writing, as an academic discipline. Like, I did it all the way to the end and got a doctorate in it. And so there came a point when I needed something to be able to turn to and use my creativity in a different way. And that's kind of where textiles came in a big way. So they kind of like, they feed the same energy, but I'm able to, like, because I didn't institutionalize my love of textile art, there's something more free there, or there's less like voices in my head about what is and isn't right to do. But I do like, I've been working on some pieces where I use poetry, not even mine, but poems, like lines from poems I like, and I incorporate them into the piece. So in that way, I like to bring them together, but I think of them as kind of separate, but yeah, same energy source.
And sorry, so you did a PhD in what?
Poetry.
What do you do to be a poetry PhD?
Great question. It's like 2 years of coursework. So it's thought of as, it was like a creative PhD, but it's also kind of training you to teach, which I had already been doing at that point. But so it's literature. You know, you pick a discipline. I picked like women's confessional poetry from the 21st century, and you know, went from there. But you build your little discipline out, and then you write a creative, like, book length work for your dissertation.
Is there something you can tell me about the subject that's going to make me sound very clever around a dinner table?
About the subject of poetry,
or particularly women's confessional poetry? I feel like I'm in the right place to know a lot about that.
Sure. No, I think I the subset within that I ended up focusing on was women's writing about body and illness, and just the way, I mean, similar to the way that people regard textile art, women's writing is often seen as being like too much, or just an expression of their overwrought emotions or this or that, and is easily dismissed. So I really wanted to like dig into the ways in which that was wrong, and then how much and the wide range of subjects and nuance within that, and kind of like try and build out its own little canon, which like the major or like the typical English canon ignores. So I don't know if that's something you can use at a dinner table, but
it's building on something though. I had a conversation recently with Tal Fitzpatrick, who's Australian. She's got a PhD in kind of craftivism and that kind of thing, and she's got a project that she's working on at the moment that's called Quiet Seething, and it's about women's rage, like, and how it's okay, this isn't what the project's about, but it's okay for men to be angry, it's not so okay for men to be crying and sensitive in the same, the inverse of that. You know, it's not okay for women to have rage. And yet she invited people to confess their rages to her, to send her long form explanations of the things that they were angry about that may have felt like they were completely irrational, but nonetheless, these were things that they dwelt in. And it was just interesting from her standpoint how much resonance there was, how it validated her own experiences, but just how commonplace it was as well. And just providing this creative opportunity for people just to express that, whatever they're pissed off about, and just going, it's life, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? But it's, we were talking about the geography, the social constructs, and how, particularly with your popular westernized viewpoint of the world, men don't cry, women don't get angry, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Challenging the expectations or the what's been ingrained in everyone.
God, that conversation got very heavy very quickly all of a sudden. Tell me how, so tell me your journey into, let's call it quilt making. I guess that's, you consider yourself a quilt artist, right?
I do quilt fabric together. So sure. Yeah. I say textile artist just because like I do lots of random stuff within that category, but quilting works.
That's fair. Textile artist. Tell me the journey. How did you end up right here, right now?
As a kid, my aunt was a professional quilter. So I was around that a lot. And my mom also does like embroidery and applique and stuff. So I kind of saw that growing up. So it was something that I was familiar with. But it wasn't until lockdown, until like 2020, when because I'm a teacher, that's what I do for my day job. And so when all of a sudden I didn't have to go to school every day, I had a Singer featherweight that my mom had given me that I had never really opened up. And I was like, now's the time. And so an artist I follow on Instagram, Tuesday Bassin, had a quilt along, ordered my stuff and got my jelly rolls together. And like I tuned up the machine, which was really fun. I like tactile stuff like that. So I got all these little new parts for it and put it together. Yeah, and I started quilting then. And that was nice for several reasons. I had done a little bit of sewing as a teenager and maybe in my early 20s, but not a whole lot of like structured stuff. So it was nice to like learn how to do certain things, like make straight lines and piece things together so it looked a certain way. And then once I did that, then I started kind of getting weird with it and trying out my own stuff and seeing like, okay, like patterns are cool, but what if I just like didn't use a pattern and figured out something else instead. And then, yeah, eventually I got another machine and I do love my featherweight, but it's not always it kind of does one thing. So it's fun to get machines that do other things and kind of started integrating it with my love of tarot. Cause I did printmaking in college as well. I went to college for a very long time, so I did a lot of different things. But as a grad student, I did a lot of printmaking. So I learned that art of like layering and like taking an image and then picking it apart and figuring, okay, what goes down first, the next, and what's like the key block on top. And so I brought a lot of that understanding when I started doing the tarot cards and figuring out, okay, like what are my blocks of color? I have one that I'm working on here, blocks of color, and then thinking of the like the stitching, the quilting on top as kind of being like the key block of the piece. But yeah, it's been something that's been really sustaining for the past 5 years for me as just like being a human in the world, being a foil to being a teacher. Yeah, but it kind of was always there, but then I kind of made it my own in the past few years.
Mm. What did you teach? Poetry?
English, high school. Yeah.
Right. Is there ever any kind of crossover? It doesn't feel like they might naturally be like with your artists. Like, do your students know that you get up to this stuff?
Sure. Yeah. I work at a private school that's very sweet and like they want you to be the person you are and not just the person who tells them to write papers. So they know about it. You know, I always have something on me, some embroidery or something. So they'll see me at lunch sitting outside and embroidering or something. And we do a lot of, you know, Linda Berry. She's a comic artist. She's just like super eccentric. She was like a peer of Matt Groening, the guy who made The Simpsons.
Oh, okay. Right.
And she does a lot of college teaching now in Wisconsin, but she has these awesome books. I like to bring in some of her exercises into my writing classes. So we'll draw too and like kind of think about our ideas visually before we write about them. So, you know.
Yeah. You're going to be one of those teachers. I always, you know, there's always those teachers, aren't there? The ones where you're like, I can remember my Mr. McFarlane, who's my English teacher, and he was like a dude when I was like, I don't know, 11 or 12 or something like that. Do you think they'll be like, and we had this teacher and she'd sit outside and do some needlework?
Yeah, they know. There's some kids, you know, you get feedback forms in the middle of the year. And some of the kids are like, why?
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Why are we drawing? This is horrible. Like, they do not like it at all. And then there's other kids who really like it. And so they're my target audience. But yeah.
That's pretty good. So you started out, so you followed some patterns for a while and then an idea emerges. Was it more like the blob kind of quilt stuff? Did that come first or did the tarots come quite quickly?
The blobs were first because I had all these scraps from, because I mostly, when I learned to quilt, it was jelly roll stuff. So just like strips. And straight lines. And so then when I would cut them, I'd have all these like colorful little bits of random shapes. And then that started to intrigue me more than the pattern. So the blobs came first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when did the tarot cards start to creep in?
Those were around, I think around, this could be totally wrong, but I think it's like 2021, 22. Right around then I quit teaching and I was like, I'm never teaching again. I'm going to be an artist. Forever only. And that lasted 2 years.
good job.
During that time, I like dug into more complex, what felt like more complex, because they're really time consuming, especially I'm thinking about the moon, like all these like little intricate pieces. So it was fun to have something that I could like zero in on, not have to take my brain away because I wasn't actually working at the time.
And was that like, was that an idea where you were just like, I'm going to do tarot cards, or did you feel like I'm going to do illustration? Like, I mean, because major arcana, like you've gone for a pretty like, this is me, this is my thing. It's quite deliberate. Was it just a clear idea, like ringing like a bell?
Yeah. So I love research and I love like art research. For a minute during my PhD program, I worked at a museum when I wanted to get out of the classroom for a minute. But like the like sort of silly story of it all, of like how I stumbled into that and like stuck with it, is that I went to the bookstore one day in the city where I was living in LA, and I found this book, Letitia Barbier's Tarot. It's just this beautiful visual archive that has like all this different stuff for each card. There's like historical images and background, and like there's also a whole section of contemporary cards. And when I found that, I was like totally enamored because I love seeing the progression of each card through time and the different ways that people have interpreted it. And I like, maybe the same way, this is gonna make my claim about poetry and textiles being separate false, but I like, in poetry I do like to work with form, because it gives you a sort of structure that you can lean on and then kind of be free, because you don't have to think of how it's put together. In the same way with the tarot cards, I'd like having something I'm working from as far as an image. So lots of all the cards I've done are based on older tarot cards, usually from the 1800s.
Yeah, the Arnu Amphu Tarot de Marseille series, I do believe.
Uh-huh. Yes, that one. Yes. So I like having that because they're never pitch perfect. They're never exact, but I like that. I like having something to go off of, but also make my own at the same time. And then so like kind of entering that conversation of what a card can look like.
But there's also entering the conversation of what a quilt can look like. And I think it's interesting as well that because quilts, it's an engineering project to some extent, isn't it? You can't have it just fall apart the minute you lift it off of the table or whatever. So you've got that conversation as well, haven't you? How you can achieve something artistically, but also architecturally.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting. And I know life isn't just social media, but for a long time, I was trying to find my place or the people I wanted to interact with on social media purely through quilting. And it's, you know, didn't quite hit. Not that I'm like a social media star or anything, but the people that I found that I really like to interact with and really like to interact with my work are tarot people. So there's like this interesting conversation for me that way too. So like, cause not everyone's doing quilting in the tarot world, but and something about it like translated well in that way. But it's nice too, cause they're small. They're not like, you can't sleep underneath my tarot cards.
Well, are they sort of like 15 inches maximum, isn't it? Something like that? About a foot and a half?
Yeah. Hmm. Something like that. Yeah. Except there is one big one that I'm working on. It feels like perpetually, but it's really big.
How big is really big?
I'm looking at my wall and trying to like imagine it. It's probably like 3 feet by 5.5 feet or something like that. It's big.
Is that like the same height as you or something? Yeah,
totally. I guess so. I mean, I'm 5'2", so I think it's actually taller than me. When I work on it, I have to like put it up high, kind of thing.
Yeah. I did a podcast recently with a guy called Fuzzy Maul, who does textile portraits and images of people. But on average, I'd say his pieces are about 10 feet tall. And the thing is, they're amazing. But with any of these times, anybody does something really big. Like with him, one of his biggest struggles is finding places big enough that he can hang the things up so people can see them. So I always just wonder whether it's worth keeping that in the back. You know, don't go more than one story high due to the natural
height. Totally. Yeah. It's unwieldy for sure. And that's why like I'm having a hard time. It's a collaboration with my friend Jennifer, who's a tarot artist. Her piece is actually, it's this tiny piece behind me.
Oh, is that the dancer? Is it a dancer or something? And I've seen you projecting it like onto your wall and kind of all of that, right?
Yes, that one. Her original is tiny. It's like, I'm not great with measurements. This is why I don't follow patterns. It's probably like 3 inches by 5 inches, let's say. So it's like very, very small. Maybe not even 5 inches, smaller than that. So it's fun to take it and make it really, really big.
But at the same time, it's like, oh, I think this is the thing with Fuzzy. Like, I think there's rarely a moment where he gets to see his whole thing unless it's laid out. Most of the time, he's just like draping it over his shoulders as he tries to wield it through his machine and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, because I have this like domestic Bernina, and I'm like, that's what I usually quilt the tarot pieces on. But with a huge thing like that, it's kind of a pain in the ass. So I'm trying to figure out. I do like free motion embroidery on a Juki. So I've been trying to use this for it. I can't decide which one I want to do it on.
It's a good challenge, isn't it? It's a bit like if you do a certain type of exercise, but every once a week you go and do a different harder type of exercise and then you come back to the one you used to. Stretching yourself, right?
Totally. Yeah. Cycling through.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what was the first tarot you did?
The moon.
Right. Why was it that one?
That one, it's a beautiful, like, reflexive card. So the top half and the bottom half are the same. So you can kind of spin it around. It looks the same either way. And I just loved all the little intricate pieces. And honestly, it has the dogs with their tongues out, like, kind of like looking at the moon. I love dogs. That was a big, big sell. And I just like the challenge of all the tiny pieces. I think I like something that's so intricate and so almost annoying that the only thing I can do is think about it and work on it when I'm doing it. And so like my brain kind of shuts off.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had a similar thing sort of in it. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I was at a spin class the other day and this song was going on for so long and it was like one of these standing climb things. And at one point it was great because I just stopped thinking about stuff. And for a minute I went, "Hello, Jamie," inside my own head, and then went, "Hello, Jamie," back to myself again, and then sort of came back to the real world again. But that's like the moment, isn't it? That's like the meditation.
Totally. Yeah, just a body in space.
Yes. Yeah. Because normally I just blether. You just blether in your head, don't you? And I think it's quite interesting sometimes the things you think about in those situations. Someone said that to me once. That's the important shit you're thinking about, because it's like whatever's rifling through your head, you know, tends to be like family stuff or whatever. But it was quite nice that suddenly that noise just went away for a minute. I was like, ooh, who right
now? Yeah, it's the best. So, yeah, it's just like you got to get fully immersed to get away from yourself. Yeah.
And then, so you did the moon and you've done star. And you've done L'Étoile, which is also a star, or is that a different card, or am I being thick?
No, you're not being thick. I think sometimes there's stars on it too. So sometimes I think of, I think it's the moon. Wouldn't it be horrible if I was calling it the wrong thing the whole time?
Wait, because étoile, I'm pretty sure, is French for
star. Star, yeah.
It'd be la lune if it was moon.
Yeah. Am I calling it the wrong thing?
I don't know. I don't want to.
It's 5 a.m.
Nobody's listening to this. It's like, no. It's all good. It's all good. but what I was interested in, I sometimes think when you get a project like this where, how many cards are there? 72? 77? 72.
Mm-hmm.
One of those numbers. There's a fixed number of cards in the tarot deck.
Uh-huh.
We'll gloss over the figures. But sometimes you think there'd be like an inclination to do like all of them or to start and go through a logical way, but it doesn't feel like that's what you're doing.
No, there's no logic. I'm just kind of feeling my way through. I just pick up this book and I find what I like and what speaks to me. And if I get through all of them, great. But if I don't, I'm not trying to make myself feel bad about it or like put myself on a
risk. Yeah. And don't get me, like, and I'm not saying that at all. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's curious. Sometimes, because if you've got like 78, just quickly check, 78 cards in a tarot set, you feel like some people go, well, I'll make 78 of them. But I like the fact that if in keeping true with like the way you use tarot, you're doing the ones that speak to you.
Sure. Yeah. And I think of it too. It's funny, like, I guess I really do kind of telegraph the message that that's my main focus, what with my Instagram handle and stuff. But like, I like, one of the reasons I like bringing this imagery into textile art is just the way that it's like tools for understanding what's beyond just the day to day. And I like thinking about that with any kind of textile piece that I make, whether it's representatory or based on a tarot card or not, like thinking about how it kind of speaks to, like, gosh, not like the beyond, that's too big, but just the way in which there's more to the world than just what we see when we're awake, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So just, yeah, I was like, that was what I was thinking. I was thinking about this earlier when I was thinking about your liminality, the spaces between.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like your poetry has a certain amount of liminality about it as well. There seems to be a sort of a reflection, or as though those are conversations that you're having with, like, sometimes it feels like with your cards, you're making those for broader consumption. This is you reflecting a thing, providing an object. It's almost like some people would say it's a design, whereas your poetry is you communicating yourself outwardly, which some people might say is more of an art thing. That makes sense. Like a one-to-one conversation as opposed to the cards, which might be a one-to-many conversation.
Sure, yeah. There's like cards are up for interpretation, whereas poetry might be more specific expression, kind of with less interpretation. Yeah.
And then what made you choose those particular cards? Because they're an interesting set, aren't they? I did a little bit of looking into it, the Arnou and Onfou deck. So 1801, that they were made by two French designers, and their particular style was quite distinct to a lot of the other like neoclassical stuff that was going on in the art scene at the time.
I like how I was looking at them with like printmaker eyes when I picked them. So just like the way that like the blobs of color are constrained and then make meaning once the lines are on top of them. I really like that. And that also helps me with like the construction to think about how to piece it together. That's really the reason why. And I just like that they're old. I don't, and like they have like this artifact feeling to them, especially if the reproductions are not perfect, right? Because the cards themselves have been used. And so, you know, maybe the best image that we have of one, or the best example we have of a card, is like has like a dog ear on it, or has like the printing, the lettering isn't perfect for whatever reason, whether it's time or that's just how it was printed and it just went out that way. I like that kind of the way that time can be also read on the card. And then I can kind of interject and try and replicate that, the passage of time that's visible on it in thread. Is really exciting.
Yeah, I mean, are you trying to go for like faithful reproduction, so you would put in, you know, those bits of time damage or anything, or are you trying to create them as though they're brand new and fresh?
With the lettering and stuff, I try and replicate what I don't fill in gaps, like if there's like an R that has a little disjoint between the rounded part and the foot of the R or something. I don't try and like fill it in. I try and keep it the way it is on the card. But yeah.
It's really interesting, like the choice of those particular ones. There's something about medieval art and you get like illustrated manuscripts and all those kind of things, don't you? And it's all this like emergent thing that predates like Art Nouveau and commercial art and all that kind of stuff. But it's interesting that the ones you chose there, you know, to me, well, apparently they're a proponent of like cubism. So that kind of style influences Picasso and all of those kind of things. But then also what it made me think of weirdly is the Disney film, The Aristocats, and that sort of jazz 1960s, 70s style of illustration where, again, you'd get quite like hard-drawn lines, but the colors would be allowed to be busting free of all those kind of shapes.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, this sounds like a negative, but I think of it in a good way, but it's like flat. I like that about it.
Mm. Yeah.
Because then that helps me translate it to textiles.
Yeah, flattening the perspective, the kind of way like playing cards do quite naturally. We just take it, don't we, as like flat faces and all that kind of stuff. But in some ways, it's like it was almost like an emergent design style at that point, from what I can understand. Because everyone else was so determined to paint things that looked realistic and dramatic and all of that sort of stuff. It's kind of like a folk art charm to it, right?
Sure, yeah. And I love that stuff too. So that surely plays a part in it. Perhaps unconsciously, but.
Well, yeah, but I think it ties in with like the, I'm just trying to think what the word is, having your feet in the ground, not even on the ground, but kind of in the ground. That's what kind of tarot is about, right? Connecting to fundamental forces. And so if it was an aloof art form, if it's made out of the finest marble, it wouldn't really be the right fit for the subject.
Totally. When it comes down to it, it's like a tool. It's something you handle and you use instead of something that's framed and on the wall, which is interesting thinking about art and what art does to it. But.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about art. I've been doing this since 2008 and it's quite embarrassing how little I know. Like, I know what I like and I've seen a lot, but I'm still like, me and art history, I've got no idea a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, same. I've been around it, but I never took it or I just, yeah, know what you like. That's almost maybe more important than knowing what you don't like or like, more, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a friend called Evan Preco who is about to launch a magazine called The Unibrow, which is a combination of highbrow and lowbrow and just kind of pitching it in the middle. And I just really like that kind of concept of just, you know, you can have the lofty ambitions, but let's also have our feet on the ground. You know, it's just as important to have somebody who's making something quietly in their hometown than it is to have an internationally recognized artist. Because, like, how very dare, like, I think you need that in this day and age. You can't be too highfalutin now.
Yeah, for sure. I was just thinking, too, about the way that it connects to poetry, too, because I'm a little bit out of touch with the poetry world right now, but there is this whole idea of, like, the gift economy within poetry and self, like, not self-publishing like straight to Amazon kind of vibe, but more just like photocopying and making little cute little zines or like meaningful little pieces of art that you then like give to your friends or trade with your friends and making it accessible that way. Because just like with any art form, like poetry can get really institutionalized and gatekept really quickly. So yeah, just thinking about that way in which, yeah, art as something that's accessible or...
When I was in London for my birthday back in January, had an amazing time. Me and my wife got rid of the kids and went to London and just hung out and did things that we liked. But there was a guy down on the South Bank and I paid him 20 quid and he wrote a poem, just typed out on his typewriter then and there, and I gave it to my wife, which is quite nice. I thought it was really gangster because it was just like free form and he's typing it as well. So there's like no room for error.
When I quit my job thinking I would never go back into the classroom, I tried that hustle for a while and that is so difficult but really rewarding. But yeah
you've really got to feel the fear and just get on with it, haven't you?
Yeah it's fun to like kind of read someone's vibe and like figure out what they want from the experience, but then also like what you can bring to the table within 10 minutes and
He didn't do a bad job, in fairness. He could tell that like because Mary had planned all these things. We went to see ABBA Voyage and we went to see Hamilton. We did loads of really cool stuff and it was amazing.
Yeah.
But he could also tell I'm not a fan of surprises. So he managed to sort of weave all that stuff in.
That's perfect.